Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Happy Monday to you all. You know, I've been doing this show now since 2020. And it occurred to me that, you know, there's all of these latest trends on social media and the TikTok challenges, and Instagram has various things that, of course, of the week people like to label, because I guess everything needs a label these days. But, you know, some I do partake in and some I just, you know, can't be bought. I'm not going to follow into what everyone else is going to do because I like to live my own life and lead by example, not do what, you know, other people are doing. However, when there is something important or there's something that I, you know, can get behind and support, that absolutely I'm going to, you know, join forces. And that being said, there's a people label Monday as Motivation Monday, and I like that idea because so many people look at Monday like it's the plague. They look at Monday like it's this dirty day that has all kinds of rain clouds circled around it. And I just feel like, you know, last night I addressed it on social media, and I did, you know, early this morning, I should say, I posted a live for a little bit just to give people some motivation to add my face and so forth. You know, but today I was thinking, you know what, I think not only do I owe you guys an episode because I haven't been on here and I feel badly about that, but I figured, you know, I have a voice, and it is a voice that reads loud and clear. It is a voice that reaches audiences around the world, those who can understand that it is, and transmit, I hope. So tonight's episode is a very special one, as tonight I'm going to be talking about bullying for a good amount of it. You know, the effects of, you know, what bullying is, how to recognize it. From my experience, my little bit of my experience with dealing with it myself, but also, you know, the best ways we can, you know, protect people from it, and also what we can do for ourselves to combat the bullying. Pandemic. This is something that has been an enemy of since for years. Bullying has been around since humanity. And what's interesting about the art of bullying is where people like to think, and this is no offense to everyone, but let's face it, when it comes to the animal kingdom, we can't continue to separate ourselves from other animals all the time. And I want to also point out, we are in fact animals. We are a living organism. We are animals. We are all mammals, which means we are connected to things like the bat, which is, by the way, my favorite animal, for those people who don't know, and other mammals. Whales are also mammals. Dolphins are mammals. In that being said, you know, I'm obviously not calling us all dolphins or whales or, you know, or even a bat, because some people get squeamish about that thing. But what I want to point out to people is that we as humans often think of ourselves as the alpha species of the planet, and that's just not true. That's our egos feeding that to us. I start the show off talking about this because I want people to understand that, first and foremost, people make mistakes, and if we really want to show that we are the alpha species and that we are, you know, truly deserving of leading the world, saving the world even, then what we need to first do is take a deep dive in all the things that make humans flaws versus other animals. You see, not in every community is bullying a thing. Animals in the animal kingdom don't bully other animals. They usually, you know, act, you know, a lot of animals, for example, territorial animals, are about their territory or about their pride lands or protecting what's theirs. But that's not an act of bullying. That is an act of them protecting their land, their pride, if they're lions or whatever their key keeping themselves. So this is something to consider, something to keep in mind as we talk about, you know, the fact that we are human, we are animals, and there's nothing wrong with being either one as long as we recognize the fact that we are capable of making mistakes, but we're also capable of making very smart decisions. And if we are able to produce all the amazing things we do, and we think we're as good as we are, then I ask the question, how does bullying begin, and how does bullying continue to be a thing since the beginning of time? It does not take a rocket scientist to realize it is counterproductive to anyone. It gets no one anywhere. And it's really kind of sickening in a lot of ways to think that people can be involved with things of that nature. So, that being said, let's talk a little bit about bullying and my experience with it and how to overcome those things. Because we have a pretty loaded show here tonight, and we're going to stay on topic tonight because I think it's a very important subject matter. And since it is Motivational Monday, I really think it's important that people realize we as humans, we make mistakes, we can learn from those mistakes, we can support each other, and we don't have to be the animals that we demonstrate half the time. Over the weekend, there was a senseless shooting, again with the guns. I want to point out there is no other species on the planet that uses guns as a way to do anything. It's fight or flight that for most animals. And I'm going to tell you, man, has things changed, and that's a scary and real thing. I was just talking to my wife the other day, how we dealt with things like, you know, bullying or people, you know, in the days of the school days, my elementary school, middle school days, even high school, you know, and I'm not proud of this, by the way, I'm not encouraging. Every solution does not have to be this magnitude, but sometimes you do have no choice. And I know that might be a very controversial subject. That might be something you don't want to hear, but it's the reality. The best way to combat bullying is to take what the bullies really want away from them. And what is it that the bullies ultimately want? Well, to be fair and to be honest, the biggest thing that bullies really, you know, the one thing that bullies really love the most is power. And they seem to live on the fear element of things. So what does that mean? So what that means is there are many, many, many things that separates people from each other. So when we go ahead, and I apologize, folks, I just took a sip of my tea. I was trying to decide why it tasted the way it did, and just realized that it doesn't have enough honey. It's cool. No worries. Sorry, folks. The thing that bullies enjoy the most is the power you give them by your fear. They live on that. That's something that they enjoy. I don't understand it because there's really no way to explain what that feels like. But I guess we can. It's a sense of power. They think that they own you. It's almost, well, all honesty, it's a very savage way of thinking. It's a very animal-like trait to be a bully. Because there's no thought process in it. It's you want to show your dominance over someone else. You want to make them feel inferior. So when you take that element away from the bullies, they lose their power. And sometimes, in some situations, you have no choice but to stand your ground. You can only run so much. And again, I am not promoting violence ever. But I am promoting confidence in yourself and recognizing a situation and doing what you need to do to fix it and make your life better. in the world, it would be wonderful for me to tell you that, you know, bullies that do not exist and that we live in a bully-free society. Unfortunately, that is not the case. We live in a world where people like to be, you know, bullies. Ultimately, they live on that power that people give them, that gives them reign over everybody and everything. Doesn't make sense to me either, but hey, what do I know? Well, I know a lot, considering. So I am an individual who, you know, has seen a lot of what bullying actually does. It's never fun. There's never any heroes involved. It's never going to be anything that brings joy to me that there's so many negative people in the world who live on that fear that others give them. But anyway, I digress. And again, see, at a young age, I never wanted to see people upset or sad. It bothered me to see them sad or upset. So much so that I was willing to put myself the butt of every joke, because I would much rather someone laugh, you know, at some antic to cheer them up, because that's ultimately what my goal is. I, you know, wanted to make people happy. I wanted to support others who are doing things and who are, you know, I support other people for being themselves. And unfortunately, we live in a world where everyone likes to judge everyone else for whatever reason. But bullying is a subject that has been around since forever. And when we talk about, I just described to you guys kind of what they get out of it. Ultimately, it's the power someone gives them over, and sometimes you do have to stand your ground. But as I was explaining to my wife and whatnot, is, you know, in the 80s and the 90s when I was growing up, if you had an issue with someone, and this is, you know, again, I'm not promoting this, but if you had an issue with someone where you knew you had to stand your ground, you said, meet me here at such time, at such place, and you showed up. And the other person would show up. I'm not going to lie to you. Most of the school and whoever heard about it would also show up. But guess what? At the end of the day, at the end of that confrontation, it was over. Today, you can't do that, because there are so many other elements that go along with that that it's ridiculous to even contemplate what someone would do in the scenario where they're getting bullied. Or... you know, even so, when you have to resort to that measure, then, you know, now it's not that way at all anymore. And the reason it's not that way anymore is because just people like to use guns as a way to solve things. And I want to point out something. All these kids bringing guns to school, it's a tragic, tragic thing. And it is a dangerous thing. Parents just should be giving all of our kids the chances they have to succeed in life, not to take lives. And when it comes to, you know, this element of things, to this level where people are, you know, hurting other people over, you know, whatever gripes someone has, it doesn't make it better because you are people who, you know, just you have an issue with someone, you know, you should, you know, do what you can to squash it the best way you can. I just realized this whole opening has been all over the place, and I want to explain to you why, so you know that I'm, you know, not paying attention, because I am paying attention to this. truth be told, I was reading an article and I was just absolutely blown away by the article. And it's also really reminded me that bullying is a thing that really has never really been to the level it's been, and the amount of gun violence that is everywhere and everything else. I feel like they go hand in hand. And I think what's tragic is that we as a society allow things like that to happen. And I say allow, and I am holding people responsible who bring things like weapons into their home. I live in the United States. Those people who don't know, I think most people do. And I am very proud of growing up here. I'm very proud of where I live. I don't always agree with the politics, but I believe in what the country was founded upon. And I believe in people in general. I don't believe, again, in all the political decisions that are made or anything like that. But I absolutely believe in the power of humanity. I believe that we as people can help save, fix, inspire the world. We have that opportunity because we are capable, and we should. A long time ago, a lot of people would, ask me, what is your experience with bullies? Has anyone ever tried to bully you? When I was making The Good Old Boy, which we'll talk about a little later on, a lot of people asked me, where did that come from? Is it based on reality? Is it based on a story? Is it based on whatever? And the reality of it is, of course it is. It's not always sunshine and roses, but I want to explain something to people that, sometimes the way we perceive what everyone else is doing is not actually what we're seeing. What do I mean by that? You probably think I'm lost. I'm not. I'll explain. So when I was in elementary school, I'm talking grades 1 through 5, I went in with a purpose and a goal. Didn't have one at first. I've always been creative. And, in first grade, you're what, 6 years old. So I've already been competing in martial arts at that point. And at that point, at six, I already had a couple tournaments under my belt that I already won. I started in competitions when I was 5. Training at 4 and competitions at 5. But regardless of that, as I mentioned before, this isn't something you went to school and talked about back then, because ultimately, if you were to do those things and get involved with, martial arts, you were kind of seen as the same as, the bullies, the targets, the ones who like to give people a hard time. They would take that as an easy target for you. And they would try you, which is counterproductive to what it's supposed to be. You would think that, someone who, he's just a regular kid who was in your class would probably leave the kid who's trained in martial arts alone. If they've ever seen what martial arts can do, they probably wouldn't. Now, today it's not that case. Today people are proud, and people see being able to take care of yourself, as I said, the pride and self-worth, and that's great to have that confidence. It's not always the case for a lot of people. And that's sad to say, but it's also very true. For so long, going back to those days, I went into school and I was already, already very creative, and I saw a person crying and I realized I don't like seeing people cry. I don't like people upset. So I made a joke, and I think I did some ridiculous thing. I don't remember what it was at this point. And by the way, I have a really good memory. For some reason, I don't remember what sparked it, but I do remember the feeling I had afterwards. There was a girl in class. It wasn't even the girl I had a crush on in first grade, which back then, again, you could have crushes on girls back then, and it wasn't seen as something like a negative thing. Back then, it was just, you had a crush on a girl. Now, today, that is not a thing that we do, and not something that they encourage in schools now, apparently. So I wouldn't survive in elementary school back then anyway. I mean, now, today, you know, this modern era anyway. But back then, what it would happen is, as I saw the girl upset, I wanted to make her happy. So I think that was some ridiculous little stunt I did. And the whole class laughed. She laughed. She stopped crying and she loved it. She was happy. And I remember that feeling of feeling proud of myself that I made the girl who was crying happy. So I decided that my first goal is to make this, you know, because I have heard of what a class clown is. I've watched my share of TV. In fact, as I mentioned before, a lot of my time back in my elementary school days was either isolated alone from everybody else or in front of the television or in the backyard playing with the animals and the wildlife, if you want to know the truth. You got to have to remember that for later on. But anyway, but because of that feeling of isolation, because, all honesty, I was training at the gyms and so forth and in various martial arts and so forth. So I was always doing that, but also on top of that, I was isolated. I didn't have people come to my house. I didn't have sleepovers because, well, I was being bullied and tortured at home. When I say tortured, I don't mean, whatever people think of what torture is. What I'm talking about is just the mental anguish of being constantly put down, ridiculed, and told that, you know, why am I so creative, and what's the point of all this martial arts stuff? What's it going to get you in life? I would write a short story in my head. And remember, I'm in first grade, and up until that point, no one embraced my creativity. I had one aunt who was also creative, who was also seen as an outsider, as a strange individual because she had a creative mind. My aunt actually wrote a lot of songs herself, and she also wrote each of us a bedtime story, me and my brothers and my sister, as well as our own individual lullabies, which are a common thing in our house. And our house growing up was that she would sing to us, you know, at nights to kind of relax us and put us to sleep. And, of course, the other adults didn't understand that, and she was, you know, constantly fighting about that. But anyway, regardless, because, you know, at home was never good because I'm constantly being insulted by my family, constantly being embarrassed by my brothers and my sister, and, you know, my mother, my stepfather, anyone who would pop in. My aunt meant well, the one who would, you know, babysit us a lot. But in the same sense, she was very opinionated, and she didn't really care about, you know, who she said her opinions to and at what cost. And because of that, she would, you know, often say things that she probably shouldn't and embarrass everyone, including me. So that being said, because of that, I didn't have a lot of friends in elementary school. Plus, I had very, you know, to be a martial art, so I had respect on a mat of any kind, right? At the tournaments, at the wrestling dojo, at the martial art, at the dojo growing up, no matter whenever I walked in, there was instant respect from everybody because they saw the work that I put in, the dedication that I had to the school, defense day, all of them. And when it came to competing to hold our own in our schools, because today, I guess it's done differently in the tournaments and stuff like that. When I was doing them in the 80s and the 90s, what you would do is you would go up against other schools, not so much individuals. So, you know, your dojo would take on another dojo, and that's kind of how they would work. And I did that up and down the East Coast, earning respect from those I, you know, compete against. And then that means a lot. I think respect is a huge thing, and I think it's something that ultimately is why, when it comes to bullying, it is so offensive to us as individuals if someone wants to take that sense of respect of ourselves away. It baffles me that no one can't respect each other's differences. Again, that's in the F-World model. That's not what I grew up with. And as I mentioned before in the last show, a lot of people believe because I formed the F-4L, I must have come from a really good, supporting, loving family. That is not the case. The reason the F-World exists is because I had the opposite upbringing. There wasn't a lot of support at home. Again, my creativity was null and void. I was seen as, you know, just some, you know, space case for the most part, because I was constantly trying to think and constantly studying. I loved animals. I loved nature. I loved science. Science is my, I love science, creativity. I love history. I love learning things. And ultimately, a lot of people thought that I wasn't very smart. But again, I am responsible for that, because I allowed people to think that, because I didn't give them any reason to think otherwise up until seventh grade, as we talked about in the last show. In seventh grade, I was told I wasn't even going to finish school because the family, my blood, my family, said that I was never going to graduate high school. You're not going to graduate high school. You're not even going to make it. You're going to drop out like everybody else. You're not smart enough. You're not good enough. And I said, watch me. And the other thing that I want to point out, I go to a lot of schools and I talk about anti-bullying. I talk about bullying in general. I talk about peer pressure. And one of the things I like to mention to this classes and the schools or whatever is we never know what's going on at someone's home, right? We never know what someone's going on behind closed doors, so to speak. So, teachers really can't be 100% to blame always. Because a lot of people will say, well, how come the teacher didn't see this and how come that? Because ultimately, bullies are smarter than you think they are. Bullies will obviously bully someone in front of them because they don't want to get themselves in trouble, see? But they'll take their opportunity of time to find the alone time. Trust me, they find the time. But you can't hold it always against the teachers when they miss something that goes on, like if they miss a cue. I do think the teachers need to be vigilant to warning signs. There are clear signs that there may be something going on that I think sometimes are overlooked. For example, if a kid comes to school and they're quiet and they're shy or they're not, you know, they don't seem to like or enjoy going home. They feel more comfortable in school. There's usually a reason for that. You know, back, I can tell you that, you know, at home, I started coming down. Most people don't know, I suffer from insomnia. I also have been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. So that being said, I need you guys, that's why I have to explain these things to people. The reason why, let me first break down post-traumatic stress disorder. What is post-traumatic stress disorder? Post-traumatic stress disorder is the result of witnessing or going through a very traumatic experience that will impact your life for life. This is common in military veterans or first responders when it comes to military, firefighters, police officers, military veterans. Back in the day, they didn't have a name for the third point. It would have many other names, shell shock, you know, and other various names. But ultimately, it was called post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD for short, which is a very common, you know, disease. It's obviously something you can control, and it's something that you can overcome. You cannot, you don't have to fall into victim of it. But the reason why I suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, I didn't go to war when I was 6 or 10. I wasn't a police officer. I wasn't a military veteran. I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder at, get this, 13 years old. And at that point, I had signs of post-traumatic stress disorder since I was 6 years old. That is from all of the fighting I witnessed growing up, all of the abuse I've seen growing up, all of the nonsense that I've seen and witnessed, which is why I do not smoke, I do not drink. I mean, I'm drinking tea right now, and I'm not going to lie to you, I have a coffee on standby. That's about all it is. I don't drink alcohol. I don't smoke. It is because I've never seen it be the result of anything good in the end. And if people think that I'm hating on people who drink, hey, drink responsibly. You're of age and you can drink. It's part of your culture, whatever. Don't have to make a fool of yourself. You don't need it. So there's that. Because I do not like drinking, and I can, you know, have just as much fun completely sober for that fact. But you see, what I'm telling you this is because while I'm growing up, and I have all these horrific things going on at home, it wasn't, my comfortability factor was on a mat at the dojo, because all of my frustrations that I would feel at home or at school when I knew people were looking at me side-eyes and people were talking about me, the adults were talking about me, not the kids. The kids thought I was the funniest thing since rice pudding. The problem is I didn't realize back then that they were laughing at me and not with me. And that's something you have to pay attention to, too. And that'll, you know, comes into the relationship factor. Because in my opinion, one of the things I always wanted to be, which I think everybody wants to be accepted. Everyone wants to have friends. Everyone wants to feel that sense of community. But the problem is that sometimes people, like in this situation, I felt that if I made everyone laugh at my own expense, that they were laughing and they were my friends, except for the fact they were laughing at me and they saw me as nothing but a joke. The teachers saw me as a disturbed individual who had all kinds of minds. That wasn't the case either. Imagine, if you would, being 6 years old, and you have a martial art tournament where people respect you, they cheer for you. No, not one relative is in that audience. Not one relative brought you to that event. Your sensei brought you there because he believed in you. The other students were there, and their parents, who supported them and their own kids, cheered you on. Imagine when you get home from that martial arts tournament, being 6 years old, winning your first trophy. Well, no, actually, at that point, it was like seven, I don't know. At 6 years old, I had multiple trophies. But bringing home probably one of the biggest trophies I had, and then imagine your stepfather not caring about that, not even acknowledging it, saying it's for fairies, quote, end quote. Karate is for fairies. Disregarding anything that I was trained in, which is multiple things I'm trained in. But regardless, it's for fairies, he would say. And proceeded to break my trophy because it was senseless and it was for wusses. Go learn a real sport. Whatever. So that was at six, but that's meanwhile, then when you're trying to sleep at 6 years old, you hear your father, your stepfather, and your mother arguing about having relations, we'll say. I'll let you guys point the pictures together. Every single night I had to hear arguing from the two. And I thought legitimately it's a couple of times he was hurting her. And as any son does, you jump to your mother's defense. And I got to also remind you guys, my mother had me first, and my mother had me out of wedlock, so to speak. So I was already painted in a different light by the whole family before I even came into the world. I was already being judged as a mistake. And I was constantly reminded of that by everyone in my blood family, that I was a mistake and that I was trash, even I was called, before I was even born. And what? And then the fact of the matter was, when it was revealed that I was a boy, then the relatives who wanted the first grandson in the family wanted to adopt me because my mother was 16, remember? But my mother said, no, it was my responsibility. I made the responsible decision to get myself in the situation being me, as I was referred to, and I'm going to live with the consequences. Again, the consequences is me. And then she would meet my stepfather, and he had three kids with him, and they were all in wedlock. So she was already married. He had my other three siblings with him. But because I was the outsider, and because I was not their own blood, I was constantly looked at like that. But even my mother's side of the family looked at me as a disgrace. because I came into a situation I wasn't even involved in. But let me tell you, this is what I lived with. I had to hear about it every single time from everybody, my cousins, my aunts, my uncles, and then I want to say something to the adults out there who think that your whispers, whenever it comes to talking about your kids or whatever the situation, if you think your kids can't hear the things you talk about them, right? If you think that they're not aware of different conversations or how you feel about them, I'm going to tell you right now from experience, you're wrong, because I hear everything. You think I'm asleep. My parents, my stepmother, my mother and my stepfather really thought that I was asleep. I wasn't sleeping because how could you sleep through all the arguing? My brother and my sister were falling asleep because they were young and didn't know any better. But I had to deal with that. And then, to boot, I tried getting help from the school. And they had counseling come in to talk to me because at school, I got the attention. I was somewhere at school because I made people happy at school. At Dojo, I was supporting the school, and I was one of the toughest people at that age. 6 years old, 7 years old, I was king of the mat. And despite the injuries I would sustain or whatever else, I continued to show up, even when I was injured, because I was someone there. I was no one at home. I was no one in the eyes of the people who were supposed to be supporting me. But this isn't about a pity party for me. Because what does this do? This gives you tools. This gives you meaning, and this will mold who I would become. Because to all those people out there who say, well, if you grow up into that kind of environment, you're going to turn out like that. Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to introduce myself. My name is Sean Jazz Stevens, and I am the leader and founder of the F4L, Lifestyle Fitness Practice Around the World, which means we live our lives with love, caring, compassion, understanding, and respect for each other's differences. There are none of those things in my blood's relatives, voices, or their dialects, or anything else. They like to stab each other in the back. They talk badly about each other. Whatever. That's their business. I leave them out of it because here's what the deal is. You know, that's kind of what I'm talking about. So I'm going through all that. I go to school, and I'm looked at like I'm a fruitcake, or I'm looked at like I have something wrong with me. I did have something wrong with me. I had the early stages of post-traumatic stress disorder because of all of the things that I had to endure. At 7 years old, I watched, you know, I talked before about an aunt and uncle who I spent weekends with over their house. Every single weekend from, you know, pretty much since I was 5 years old, I went to my aunt and uncle's house in South Boston. And I always thought that I knew them well, and I always kind of knew that my uncle could be kind of grouchy. He was older. He served in the military. He was a veteran. He had his own business. He was a tough guy. He also introduced me to more wrestling than what I got into. And, you know, at the time growing up, I didn't know that, you know, the wrestling he was showing me was actually going to help me later in life. To be fair, it was my mother's twin who introduced me to pro wrestling. For the first time, and my other uncle is the one who continued it on weekends and showed that there was more wrestling outside of what I knew. So I owe him that. But also, I owe him for teaching me a lesson about alcoholism. What is alcohol? So growing up, we always had an uncle who, you know, was an alcoholic. His name, I'm not going to say his name, but I will say his name because he has nothing to be ashamed of. His name was George, and he was one of my favorite uncles, honestly, and I had no issues with Uncle George. My mother also didn't have a problem with Uncle George, and Uncle George didn't have a problem with her. Uncle George was the epitome of kind of the 60s guy, that he is probably the biggest music lover and peace, love, and rock and roll, because he used to say that, but he also knew to stand his ground when he needed to. He was labeled as an alcoholic, but he was an amazing individual. He was always funny with or without the alcohol. He was funny. But he was funny. He was good with animals. He could train a dog like that. He as a kid growing up, he had pet chipmunks. I know. I talked before about the animal thing about the Stevens family, but there's another one. But he was a he was a fun guy. I liked having him at parties. He was good to talk to. He liked making jokes. You know, that was what I thought an alcoholic was. Until my other uncle, who I spent weekends with, who, you know, my uncle owned racehorses. I think I talked about that briefly before. They were owned racehorses, and at a young age, I was brought to a racetrack almost every single Sunday and the weekends and the fairs or wherever horse racing was allowed. So I learned about stables and learned about horse racing. I learned about gambling. I learned about all that stuff at the age of five when I'm walking around the track by myself. And I didn't really realize that at that time, how dangerous that was back then. Could you imagine now yourself allowing your five-year-old to walk around a racetrack, a horse track, by themselves, unaccompanied by another adult? Well, this was back in the 80s, folks, so there's the different times. And obviously, I'm here to talk to you, so obviously, you know, I survived. But anywho, just all that time I spent over the weekend, in all honesty, I owed it to my aunt and uncle for bringing me to a lot of places. It was my aunt who would bring me to a lot of the museums and the zoos and whatnot. You know, and that was something that was important. She also believed in religion. She would go to church a lot. And it was also thanks to her organist that, as I talked before, I do like to play keyboard and anything with keys, piano, keyboard, organ. And because I had two aunts who were in the choir, two different choirs, two different areas, but this particular aunt in Southie, she was on the choir, and sometimes if the organist was out sick or couldn't do the, you know, couldn't run choir practice, I would actually be able to play the church organ, which what a huge thrill that is. So, you know, that's kind of one of the cool things. Imagine being 7 years old and playing an old Gothic-style church organ. Oh, man. The music lovers out there, ears are perking up right now. That's pretty cool right there. It was a good feeling to know that I could do that. Of course, my family were quick to ridicule that, too. And how can you pick up a key and play that like that? It's ridiculous. You never took a lesson. Why are you playing that? You shouldn't play a thing I was constantly having to deal with. Other people would say, good job. My family would tell me all the lies. But anyway, I digress. So needless to say, it's easy to see where I got all that from. And of course, by the time I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, I had already been through more things than I ever cared to. I've been abused in every way that there is. In the same house in Southie, after my last judo tournament, my mother's boyfriend at that time lit the room on fire with all my trophies and everything involved in it. I would get into fights with him on a regular basis because he was only a few years older than me and only an inch or two taller. Yeah, he was 18, I think. He was 18 or 19, her boyfriend at that time, and I was 10. So that was a fun time. Won a tournament, brought the trophy in, and he lit the room on fire. So everything that I had worked for in martial arts that meant something, lit the whole room on fire because whatever reason, he was pissed or angry or something. But regardless, that was when we would go and live with my step family in the middle of a judo tournament, by the way. I won that tournament. And that trophy we never got to pick up because my step family said there was no room in the car. And again, I was constantly reminded that I am a Stevens, not one of them. And that, you know, I'm lucky to go with them, and that, you know, because of the fact that, you know, it wouldn't look good to the neighbors if they only took my brothers and sister, not me. It wouldn't look good to the neighbors. So I better be thankful for coming with them, as they constantly put me down, trashed me, trashed my family, wouldn't allow me to go to my grandmother's funeral, who raised me, who was responsible for my martial arts, and then some. But I digress. See, the moral of this bully lesson is a lot of people are under the assumption that bullying can only happen from strangers or people at school. And for the most part, yeah, it can happen there too. It can also happen at home by the people who are supposed to care for you. I think that's something that a lot of people don't take into account. And that's a sad thing. It's a sad truth, but it's honestly a truth that we all should know and be aware of. So that being said, what do you do with that? You know, when I was in seventh grade and I was told I was never going to graduate, I was never going to fulfill anything, I was never going to amount to anything, I wasn't going to dream of finishing school, I'm just going to be a dropout and da-da-da-da. And I want to point something out. I've never quit anything in my life. Even jobs that I've done, if it wasn't for a greater good, I did all of that on the up and up as well. And if anything, I always left on a positive note with the opportunity to go back, which I once in a while I would never. So there you go. But I could if I wanted to. I have the respect of everyone at work as well. Because of my ethic. So there's that. But because of that, 7th grade to 12th grade, back to back to back to back, honor roll, high honor roll, honor roll, high honor roll, high honor roll, honor roll. And it was printed in the newspaper every quarter. So my stepfamily would see this because I would make sure they were, you know, made aware of it. And then how did I get back at these people who ridiculed me and cut me down and told me I would never finish school? You want to know how I dealt with them? I invited them to my high school reunion. You want to know why? Because when I finally graduated in 1999, I graduated high school with honors, 14th in class. And why? Because I have an S at the end of the name. 14th in class of a class of, what, 1,500 kids. I want you to take that into account. I invited people who put me down and cut me down to an event that was supposed to be celebrated. Now, I invited them. Do you think they showed up? Of course not. Because the idea of inviting them was because they would have to sit there with everyone else in the city as my name was called as graduating high school with honors, National Honor Society, and they would have to hear my little speech, which I was never going to mention them anyway, but other than that, because they would have to eat crow, so to speak, they never showed up at my high school graduation. You know who was there? The F4L. So this is what we're going to go into looking at the F4L and the friendships and how that came to be a little bit. I think at some point I am going to do a deep dive. Maybe Thursday this week I'll give you guys the whole thing. Actually, maybe I should do that. You know what? I'm going to hold off on telling you guys the details of the F4L, of how it formed, until Thursday, since it's Throwback Thursday, right? So Thursday this week, we'll do a story time about the origin of the F4L. Why is this the F4L headquarters? On Thursday this week, I will go into detail and tell you guys the early stages, how it formed, why it formed, and all that. But the reason I have to mention this is because these are the people who have become my friends, my family for life. Because that's what that does, ultimately. That's what that means. Now, let's look at relationships real quick. So, within relationships, we all have people we think are our friends. And, you know, I tell my kids this, the same thing. I've been spurting the same thing for years. And my kids could probably say it in their sleep. And if they're hearing this right now, they've probably already said it already. The best way to figure out who your real friends are is to step back for a second and to think this little saying here. Real friends don't kick you when you're down, they help you up. Let me say that again. Real friends do not kick you when you're down. They will help you up. What does that mean? Well, here's what this means. That's a quote, by the way, for those people like to quote Wednesday. It is a life quote that I've been using for years. and my kids can say it in their sleep, because it is ultimately the best and easiest way to figure out who's your real friends versus all the other people who will be in your life. So in school, you're going to have kids you're going to interact with. Are all of them your friends? Probably not. You know, if you see, you know, Joey in science class and you guys waved at each other, you guys are acquaintances. Because you guys get along, you're acquaintances. And then again, if you're in a soccer team or a sports team, those are your teammates. So they're friends. Some of them can't be your friends, but let's face it, just because you're on a team with a bunch of people does not make them all your friends, reality speaking. In all honesty, it would be kind of impossible to really be friends with every single one of them, like that kind of a friend. What is a friend? So let me break down to you what a friend is. The saying, real friends don't kick you down, they will help you up, right? So a real friend is going to be supportive of you, will think of you before they even think of themselves. I know that sounds a little ridiculous. I do tell people to always believe in yourself, and you absolutely should. But a real friend knows you better than you do. The real friends are the ones who can recognize when you're in trouble, who can recognize when you're upset, who will reach out to you and say, hey, are you okay? For nothing more than wanting to be there for you, because you are their friend. You are their, that's what you're there for. You're friends. They look for you and they look out for you. When you have good celebrations, they're there to celebrate with you. When you have hard times, this is where the help you up part comes in. When you're going through a hard time, you in school, maybe you had a breakup, or maybe you're having a hard time at home, maybe your family's going through a hard time, maybe through a divorce, your real friends, they support you in that factor. When the world and adversity kind of holds you down, your real friends will be there with their hands out to help you up every time. Now, let me tell you what it is to be a friend, what I do for my friends, what kind of friends we were. So what a real friend is, as I explained, so let's say a friend of mine had a hard time. It's 2:00 in the morning. They need some advice. They need to get something off their chest. They don't even think twice. They pick up the phone and they dial my number. And guess what? At 2:00 in the morning, regardless if I'm sleeping or not, they said, hey, I got to talk to you about something. And you talk to them. Regardless about how tired you are, you get up and you talk to them. You're there for your friends. You listen to them. You comfort them. You give them encouraging words. You listen to them. That's the biggest important thing. One of the biggest issues in a relationship is the communication factor, missing dialogue, things left unsaid, things you wish you had said that you cannot say anymore, things you had said that you wish you could take back. Let me tell you what it is to be F4L real quick. Thursday I'll go into the whole everything about that you need to know about the F4L, its origin, its beginning, its end, and, well, it's not ending, but you'll get it. But when you have, this is a true story, and this is a great example of what I'm talking about. So, because of the fact that I am there for my friends, like they are my family, they are my family, they are my brothers and my sisters, I will do anything I can for them, anytime. They need me, I'm there. I'm the most dependable person that's there. I listen to everything that they have to say. I am blunt and I'm honest when I give them my feedback. That doesn't mean I always say the things that they want to hear, because sometimes as a real friend, you have to tell them. You have to not be afraid of sharing with them truth. If, you know, Joey is acting like he's not acting like himself, and he's going into something that he shouldn't get into. Maybe he's talking to someone you know is a toxic person. Then you need to bring that up to him and be that friend to him. Call him attention to it, because you respect him that much, and he respects you to give them that, because he knows you're there to help him up. Let's say, you know, Joey decides he wants to smoke cigarettes or do drugs with other people. Now, in the F4L, we don't control what everyone does because we respect each other's differences. Some people believe that they need to smoke marijuana to relax them or drink or smoke to deal with their issues. And I'm going to tell you this right now. These are just crutches for anything. They are band-aids for whatever issue you're going through. If you really want to, you know, get rid of whatever's troubling you, the best way you can take care of it and the easiest way to manage is to deal with the issue head on and to utilize your friends who will listen to you. Ask for feedback. Your friends will listen to you and will give it to you. I want you to look at the people around you. I want you to think about all of the people who you think are your friends, the people who claim that they are your friends. Think about all the people you interact with. How many of those people can you call at any point in the time and say, can I just talk to you for a second or something that's bothering me that has nothing to do with them or anything particular, that you have an issue, you want to talk to someone? How many people can actually have a conversation with your great friend, just talk, rather than just play a game or do something else? Can you have a heart-to-heart talk with your friend? In the same sense, can your friends, the same friends, are they able to go to you and say, hey, listen, can I talk to you about something? And is it a mutual respect? Or are you in a relationship where, when I say relationship, I'm talking a mutual friendship, not necessarily romantic, but also these rules could apply to both, really. But with a friendship relationship, a mutual, you know, thing, in your circle, because everyone has one, how many of those people can you rely on? How many people do you trust with your darkest, with your biggest secrets? How many people can you rely on? How many people right now, if you were in issues, could you call right now who would answer your call without giving you a hard time about calling them? Because I can tell you from experience, sometimes for ourselves, it's easier to have a good relationship with someone. Say you're in school and you have those friendships, quote, that you meet in high school, right? And you'll hear stories about, hey, you know, we were good friends on the football team, basketball team, wrestling squad, whatever, right? But I want you guys to think now, if you're older and you're someone who has already finished school, how many of those people in high school you played a sport with, you still talk to on a regular basis? How many of them pick up their phone and say, hey, yo, Joe Schmo, how you doing? How's everything going? How's life? How's the kids? Social media came into play, and social media has allowed people to reconnect in that way. People you haven't seen since grade school. For me, for example, can I tell you that whenever I talk to someone I went to elementary school with, because I want to remind you guys, in elementary school, I was the school clown, not class clown. And I went to great lengths to make sure everyone was laughing and having a good time. Not all of it was creative and not all of it was great. But I accomplished my goal because I was the butt of the joke. In Blockbuster, years later, I would meet people who would bring their kids in who would tell me that the school that I went to now has a policy where they tell you what you can and cannot bring to school to show and tell because of me. Years ago. So that's not necessarily the legacy you want to leave behind. I'm not proud of those things. And a lot of the people who I talked to in elementary school, were blown away that this kid in elementary school would go on to graduate high school with honors, would go on to become a professional wrestler, would write all kinds of award-winning essays and short stories and songs, poems, a screenplay, make a film, meet some of the most incredible people in the world, form the F4L, have a wife, kids, whatever. They would never have believed you. They barely believed that I was able to overcome those things. But the moral of the story is, in life, you're going to meet people who are going to be coming in and going out. And this is about the real relationships, right? The people we really consider to be our friends. I think the sad truth, but it is a good truth to really realize. If you really break down the people in your circle, you'll probably find you have maybe 1-2 friends at most that fit the description I just gave. Again, the description is someone you can talk to about anything without any kind of judgment. You're not worried about them calling you a name or judging you for something you said. They listen to words that you're saying, not hear, but listen. Because there's a difference. Any parents know the difference between when their kids hear and listen, and we all heard that one. But to listen to your friends, and then to be able to give them feedback and help them. And the same goes for them for you. I think what you'll find is you maybe have 1 or 2 people that match that description. Someone that, without question, you know that person is going to have your back no matter what. So that's what a real friend is. Now, I have to be honest with you guys. At one point, I had lost my way for a while. And I'm going to tell you why, and I'm going to have to have you guys understand that this is something I had to learn or remind myself. You see, real friends don't kick you down, they help you up. I was always the bully buster in high school. I was always the person who spoke up for everybody else. But there's something else that you're missing that I didn't say. I didn't care about me. I wasn't supportive of me, and I will put everyone else before me always, because that's who I am and that's what I do. Is it because of how I grew up, always putting everyone else before me, wanting to make sure everyone else is okay? Because at one point, I had to raise 3 kids by myself when my mother took a break from mothering. And then when I was on my own at 14, 15, by myself, that's not a lot of fun. A lot of kids out there who think they have it rough at home, reevaluate your situation. Look at your situation. Is it really bad at home? I can tell you that at my house, it was in my best interest to leave my home. At first, you know, my stepfamily were the ones who kicked me out because I got pregnant. Ultimately, that resulted in me losing my first son and my girlfriend because I wasn't allowed to go with her to have me live with her mother, you know, in another place. She went by herself to ask her mother, who would have allowed that, and we would have raised my son and probably would, you know, today, who knows what would have happened. But that didn't happen. And of course, I was upset and hurt and angry. I was angry at, you know, my stepfamily for not allowing me to go with her. I was angry at where I was that would allow me to because my step-grandmother had control of me. And they had the final say at that point. But most of all, I was angry at myself because I allowed that to happen. I wasn't there to protect her. And a lot of people have told me over the years, because you weren't allowed there, that's not your fault. You couldn't control that. It doesn't mean I don't feel bad. It doesn't mean that I don't feel like I'm responsible. I still feel badly that I lost, that happened. And then right after that happened, she herself, my girlfriend, lost her battle with just the depression, the fact that I wasn't around because I was currently in a situation where I couldn't get to her. She lost the baby. That's a very hard thing for a woman to lose a baby. Something that grows, that you have plans for, and to have that ripped away is, I can't imagine what she felt, but I know what I felt. It plagued me, which is probably why most of my life I always knew I was going to be a husband, I was going to be a father, and I was going to be the best I could be. But because I grew up with lack of that, which back to the point, you do not have to go with whatever life tells you to. You do not have to follow suit with what your family believes if you do not believe in their views. I'm not telling you to rebel, but if you're in a situation where everyone else is negative, and I'm not telling you to up and leave either. I'm talking about being responsible, being able to think for yourself. Sometimes that comes at a price. Sometimes it comes with losing relationships. I'm going to tell you this right now, that my family, my blood, I really don't talk to a lot. I had my cousin on here not long ago, my cousin Shai. He was actually my Uncle George's grandson. His daughters were awesome people. My Uncle George, as I said, I think the world of him. I had a lot of respect for him. Granted that I know he, he may have had his problems with alcohol, but it was my Uncle Dick, which was, by the way, his name was Richard, but we called him Uncle Dick. That was what we called him, who taught me that alcoholics can be dangerous and violent and can be dangerous. Because at six, because at eight, at 7 years old, even though I'm trained in martial arts, I watched this man attack my aunt in a trailer in the most barbaric way I've ever seen anything. And I could do nothing but sit there and watch. Again, ladies and gentlemen, these are the things that I've had to overcome. But I do not live in the past. I learn from the past and make decisions in the future. And when it comes to relationships, for a long time, I was comfortable with the people who are around me just because they were around me. People who I knew for a long time, I just, might as well just continue hanging out with them. But what you're going to find out is, as time goes on, those friendships that are really more like acquaintances can drift apart. And I've had to learn some very, very hard lessons about friends who are really your friends versus the friends who are kind of when you're what we call, coincidental friends, friends that are there when they need something. And unfortunately, I've had a lot of those. Because I was young when I had my first place, a lot of people saw my place as being a hangout spot because I was, a young teenager, had his own apartment. So a lot of people thought that they could come to my house and be, make it there. That wasn't the case. That's my house. I worked for that. And by the way, I went to work and paid the rent on that apartment. And it did not come without consequence. Now, remember, I also go to wrestling school. I was also wrestling at the time and everything else. And I was also volunteering and helping other things. So there was a lot going on, but because I was so young and had my first place, a lot of people saw my house as the hangout spot. So, make friends with him. And then when I had people who I considered to be really good friends who were in a hard way and they needed a place to stay, I took them in. Even though, maybe I had a place that, wasn't allowed to have more than me. But I took them in anyway because that's the friend I am. If you need help, I'm there to help you. But what would happen is, they're only supposed to be there for a little while until they find something else. And then what happens is they get complacent where they are. I don't push them because they're going to work in their own thing. I'm working my own life. I'm not going to, dictate what everyone else is going to do. And again, respect others' differences. I had one of my closest friends, a person who in my early days was really one of my best friends. And he came to stay with me and, after almost a year and a half of living there, not paying any of the rent, eating the food and I think towards the end, he was even asking me when I'm coming home, or he was coming home late and I couldn't, you know, whatever the case may be. And it's just, that's not what a positive relationship is. And when I said, listen, you know, agreed that, you know, you were going to be here till you found a place. At that point, he had thought he had an apartment, and I said, you really need to go to that apartment. I can't have you here much longer, man. It's already been almost 2 years. He left, and he never talked to me again after a year and a half of living with me and growing up since we were 12, 13 years old. But that's what I'm talking about, when you have to be aware of when people are actually your friends, or they're friends because you are want something out of you. This is something I can find in people who are successful, because people leech on people like that as well. And that's probably the best way I can compare them. And all honesty, I'm going to be blunt and honest with you guys. There are probably a lot more leeches around you than you probably think you realize. What is a leech? All right, a leech, this is a term I've come up with for a friend who, or again, air quotes for the friend. A leech is a person who kind of attaches themselves to you and kind of interjects you as you're their friends, but they need a place to stay. So they know they can go to you to stay at your house and you won't kick them out because you're nice and you're their friend, and they'll say nice things to you once in a while. But they're really there because you don't kick them out. It's just they constantly want you to get the money. Maybe you have a job and they don't, and they constantly want you to buy this, that, and the other thing for them. I'm going to tell you a fact right here. I refuse to buy anyone cigarettes or alcohol. And I might sound like a jerk for that, right? But I won't buy someone cigarettes or alcohol because I feel like if I do that, I am contributing to their issues or maybe even leading to their death. I know that sounds very dramatic, but that's how I view it. Because seeing people just smoke regular cigarettes, hello, my mother was in a wheelchair because of emphysema. She started at a young age. I've talked about that before, and not to mention I've had 3 other relatives die just from lung cancer from smoking. And alcoholism, I've already discussed that. So I will not contribute that to someone else. So if someone asks me to buy them alcohol or cigarettes, it's always going to be a no. But I have been friends with people, hey, you know, get me a coffee, I'll get you back. But then they never get me back. And then I got to get them another coffee, and then another coffee, and then another coffee. And then let's say we go out one time and I'm short and, you know, maybe they pick up the coffee once. And then they remind me that I owe them. And they will constantly tag me, hey, when are you going to give me the money back? I really need the $2 back. When I never ask them for the money back for any of the coffee that I bought them. These are leeches, or people who, you know, they get comfortable in their own right because they can, you know, you can drop everything to get them. Like maybe someone who has a car wants you to hang out with them because you always buy them gas money. You always give them gas money to take you. Or maybe maybe you are the driver and your friends are your friends when they need a ride. How many people are like that? Hey, Joe Schmo, you want to hang out for today? You know, we just got to swing by this, that, and the other thing. I'll give you some gas money. Guess what? Because you're their friend, you say, oh, sure, I'll pick you up, and you want to hang out anyway. But the reality is they're using you for your car, not because they want to just hang out with you. That's the honest and sad truth. A leech will be someone who will attach to your successes and your whatever. So, you know, I, for a long time, and I am very guilty of this is why I'm bringing it up to you, I bought concert tickets, I bought movie tickets, I bought convention tickets, booked hotel rooms for everybody that I knew. At one point, I went to a concert twice in 1 week. One of the concerts, I brought 3 people. The other one, I brought 8 people. Me, I spotted all the money to go to the shows. They're great shows. They're great moments, great memories. But I did that a lot. And then when I stopped doing that, because I would often, a lot of the times I would never get offered, hey, you want to, I got an extra ticket, you want to go? No one ever invited me to go anywhere. But yet I always invited them. They always never said no. But when they went someplace, they never invited me. They never got me a ticket. And then going to conventions and things like that, or going to a show where I pick up all the tickets in the hotels, in the travel, and then not even get a thank you, or whatever the case may be, or, whatever the case may be, they go because they, quote, they're going down to celebrate my birthday. This is one of the most recent ones. People who want to go down to celebrate my birthday in March, but in reality, I bought all the tickets, I bought the hotel rooms, or I booked the hotel rooms because I don't play around. This is back when I was, before I was working for the event. But I would book the hotel rooms first because they all knew that I always had that down. And then I'd get the tickets for everybody. And they knew, then during the show, I would never see them during the whole time of my birthday weekend until it was time to leave on Sunday. We go for one meal on Thursday when we get there, we leave on Sunday, and they dictate when we leave on my birthday weekend. So that's kind of what I mean, right? So you got to be careful of those leeches, because we're going to go transition into the next segment, and I know you guys are like, this is interesting. It's kind of going within the bleeding into other topics, because leeches and those real, those, you know, paying attention to those real friends and whatever, and you can't ignore the red flags when you get them. When you have feelings, you need to listen to them. The voice in the back of your mind that says something's off about this or this doesn't feel right, you need to listen to that. Because if I had done that, a lot of the things in the filmmaking world, I would have avoided. But I'm very proud of my filmmaking world. So, first and foremost, in order to tell you about the film, I have to take you back to 2021. So, in the summer of 2021, I was working for a group home, I was working for a day program for adults with mental illness, and I loved that work. I was helping run up, I was running their social program. So, the adults, because they struggle with various different things or whatever, and at that point, I was in between, I was just getting in of being injured or whatever. Actually, I wasn't injured yet, but I was working, I was wrestling a lot, but on weekend, I would volunteer at this place, and I became the social program coordinator, which meant I set up all their activities for the adults, because a lot of them didn't have a lot of money, but we believed that, they should be integrated, they should have the same opportunities as anyone else, so my job was basically to help them integrate into the society, maybe go for bowling or go to a go to events, go to theme parks or whatever at a discount rate. My job was to make that happen. I'll go to sporting events or concerts or whatever. That was what I did. I was proud of that. And in 2021, because I was, 21, just turned, and I was asked by the company if I would be willing to go to the International Clubhouse Conference, because this the place I worked at was considered a clubhouse. Which is a place for people to go, and it fit all the needs. And these places are held all over the world, literally all over the world, because I met everyone from all over the world. But they asked me in the summer if I would go to represent the clubhouse and to talk about, what I did, being from a young age and working for the thing, and, I'm a very good speaker, and I was. At that point, I was already doing a lot of public speaking and so forth and various other things. So, of course, I agreed, because I'm not going to say no. And plus, the company was paying for my trip to go to Chattanooga, Tennessee, of all places. And that event was going to be in October of 2023. And it was held in October of 23. Sorry, October of 2021. That's when all the event was. And you need to pay attention to that date, October of 2021. I was asked in probably, I want to say July, they asked me, because what happens is when the company is going to pay for your plane tickets and book your hotel rooms and so forth and all your accommodations, it was a conference, again. And again, this is going to have people coming from all over the world, Australia, Germany, the UK, Italy, Russia. Well, maybe I don't know about Russia. I don't remember that. But I know there was some people there from Ukraine, Switzerland, Canada, South America, you know, pretty much everywhere, right? There were people all over the place, delegates from all these other clubhouses, amazing people, all of them. Love the Australian people. They were probably my favorite people to hang out with were the Australians, a lot of fun. And someday I plan on going over there to see, you know, how all that works. It's so kind of cool, though. But anyway, so when they asked me in July of 2021 to go, and I said, absolutely, I'm there. So, again, the event was going to be in October, and I was going to do things. And as you guys know, I'm a writer, and one of the things I had not written in a while was a song. And I kind of got this idea for this song about a kid who's misunderstood. A lot of it is due to my upbringing. So the people who assumed that that was what the song was about and the movie that would become, was, you know, take things one thing at a time, were correct on that. It's about how everyone in the world views this kid as, you know, strange or unusual, but in reality, he's just like any other kid, and they're just misunderstanding the fact that all he wants is a friend. He just wants to be accepted, wants to belong. And it was called The Good Old Boy. It's the name. Or The Misunderstood Boy, I would rename it. And then, of course, we'd rename it for the movie, too. But anyway, The Misunderstood Boy was the song. And I had been writing it for a little while. And then in September of 2001, we all know what happened on September 11th, 2001. I still remember it. I'm not going to go into the full details right now because that's not what this is about. But I can tell you that the world was shook to the point where there was supposed to be 8 of us delegates from our place that were asked, and only 2 of us went. My family, of course, did not like the fact that I was still going to go. I was still going to honor my commitment because I was not going to show fear. I was not going to be bullied into keeping silent or doing something that was important. Going to represent my clubhouse alongside of all of these other delegates from all over the world, that was important to me. And I was not going to let any terrorist keep me from spreading the positivity message and about making a difference in the world and uniting people, the barriers and the stigma and whatever else. That was why I went. And I went to Chattanooga, Tennessee in October of 2001, a month after 9/11. 2001. And on the last day, they had what's called an open mic, which is where you talk about what the weekend meant to you. Well, the week, actually. It was a week-long conference. So what it meant to you and what the whole, you know, everything was going on. A lot of people were talking about what happened the month before and all the other things. When it came to me, I got up in front of 500 delegates from all over the world. True story. People from all over the world in this room. There I am standing in front of these people with a microphone, and I decided this is the time for me to unveil my new song, The Misunderstood Boy. And I sang it a cappella, and I got my I got one in the past, but this is the first one in a long time. I got a standing ovation for a song that I wrote that I sang a cappella in front of 500 people because the message was universal. Now, that being said, I'm not allowing bullies to take control of my destiny. And I sang that song, and now let's take you to graduation of film school. In writing my first screenplay, and my first, I was one of the people out of film school because they really enjoyed my script and how I really believe my set should be. And how I believe a set should be is a family-like atmosphere, because I believe that if you have like a family-like, relaxed atmosphere on set, it makes the movie feel like it flows better. This method has been, you know, used now multiple times since I've done it. And I'm very happy that so many people embraced us. And it does help, trust me. When you have a crew that gets along with each other and a cast that fully embraces everything and they work as one, it is a great feeling. It adds to productivity and it gives people all kinds of opportunities. That's ultimately one of the biggest things I have on set. So I wrote a screenplay based upon the song The Good Old Boy. And it was about a kid who was misunderstood and no one understands him. But also on the flip side of that is the big brother. Now, granted, a little thing here is back in the early days in real life, I was a big brother mentor for a number of years in my late teens into my early 20s. I was a big brother mentor for Big Brother, Big Sister. And I helped a lot of kids. And because of my background in human services, I was usually given, quote, the tough cases, quote, end quote, which I still very much disliked how they labeled that. But I also enjoyed making a difference in helping people. And, basically the idea of the movie was the good old boy, which is ultimately really the star, he doesn't know how to make friends. He does things that are bizarre and different, and he thinks that's going to attract them. But no one, including his own mother, his own family, and school officials, the other kids in schools, they just give him a hard time, and they dismiss him as just being strange. They don't get him. On the flip side of that is the big brother. Now, when we're talking about a big brother, we're not talking about a real life. No, they're not related. But here's this other character. He's older. He's left town. He's a local hero. And I got to say, looking back, it would be a loophole today looking at it. But anyway, we'll try to digress from that. We'll talk about my script later. But the big brother had been away from town for a long time. He's world famous, loved by all. Everyone loves the guy. He's the most popular person on the planet for various things. He was an athlete. He was a wrestler. He was this, that, and the other thing. And he's well known around the world. But here's the thing. He doesn't understand why there's so many people like him. He doesn't know why he's so special. Because fun fact, when he was in that same town, he also didn't really accomplish anything. He was also seen as an outcast. He was alone. He didn't have friends until he learned his own way. So ultimately what happens is the good old boy would meet the, quote, big brother. And the idea would be that the big brother would take the little brother, the good old boy, under his wing and kind of show him how to stand up for himself, how to be okay to be him, and ultimately open up the eyes around the people who are around him. That he is an awesome young man, and he would go on to become friends. And because the big brother is there to help him out, the little brother is the good old boy is showing the big brother, so to speak, why he is so loved, why he is so respected, and it's because of his willingness to help others and whatnot that the big brother never saw before. He doesn't see himself as someone special. So ultimately, they had to show each other really why each of them had their own dilemma. As they both, the big brother went through that and he overcame it. That was the idea. And of course, the subplot was that, of course, the local gang leader, based upon my real life bully, John, not bully, because I can't say he was a bully because I did fight him quite a bit. So a bully is someone who ultimately kind of gets away with it and kind of you allow has that power. He was someone who I fought a lot in real life in my early days. But he was the local gang leader who, when his old rival comes home, he wants revenge. And, of course, anyone near him gets revenge. So that's the subplot. And it was called originally The Good Old Boy and His Big Brother, but then we shortened it to The Good Old Boy. Then The Misunderstood Boy and whatnot. Now, I tell you this because this is where I get my first lesson in the filmmaking world on my own. prior to me doing my own film, I've helped out other films on their sets with either casting, because I've always had a knack for knowing talent. I've talked about that before. We had Christian Goodwin on my show early last year, who now is, you know, he's doing music for a little while. I haven't talked to him a little bit. Maybe we'll have to get him back on here to do an update. But Christian was one of those people that I helped, that I was very much pioneering to get into this film called Millwood at the time, and under Romero Films, which I had I owe Michelle Romero a lot of respect and a lot of thanks for helping, taking me out of the wing. I did a lot of internship from her while I was going to film school. When I got my own, when I made my first film, ultimately I was going to go with the people who I knew. But ultimately, when it came down to it, and I had the casting calls and everyone started coming in, because of how I run the set, I still remain very close to everyone, and I'm also very respectful of everyone who came tar of it. And I'm also proud that everyone who's came through our sets all went on to do amazing things. Devin Henry did some big things. We're proud of him. David was another one. There was so many of amazing people. Zach was great. Zach was a good old boy. There was so many amazing people we got to meet during that time of filming, and I enjoyed all of the time on the set. And there is nothing more fulfilling when you see a work on a screen. I don't care what anybody tells you. As a filmmaker, to see all of the magic, when you're on set, it can be a nightmare. It can be monotonous. It can be chaotic. It can be, you know, headache-inducing. But when you see the final product on a screen, nicely put together, everyone flows and everyone enjoys it. That is the feeling that a filmmaker hopes to enjoy. I hope they do anyway. I know I always did, and I was always respectful of people who were part of those. And I look forward to having that feeling again very soon, because ultimately I missed that feeling, and I think it's about time that I brought that feeling back for many and gave the world more than just remakes and reboots. Anywho. That being said, in my wrestling, this is in, when I was, you know, during the time I was filming, going to film school, whatever, I had, you know, already gotten the green light to go back to wrestling. And I found a little local wrestling company, and I helped them, you know, with training. I helped train the students on how to do promos. Promos, again, is talking, which is something I clearly have no issues doing. So, you know, at first I thought the promoters were making fun of my character because I was always, as mentioned, the good guy. And because while I was injured, I wasn't allowed to go to a gym, which is something that I was always very prone for. I was always very active, very much in shape, but because I put some weight on. But I was still very athletic. I could still move around a ring. It's just the fans wouldn't know that, because they wanted to make me an unfit fitness guru named Jazz Fitness, the YouTube sensation, he would come to be. Which, by the way, as you heard, is one of the most popular people out of my characters that I am. Now, that being said, while in part of that company, I would meet a young man who was training as a wrestler. Who was in, you know, in high school, they had a trade school where he was learning culinary, which is cooking. But he also had a passion for recording and film editing and things like that. So, you know, he asked if, you know, if he could, be, you know, come to set and be part of the film process. And I'm all for people want to get passing knowledge on to the future. So, of course, I allowed him to be on set. You know, when you're trying to make a film by yourself, you know, I'm doing all the casting, the directing, the writing, the producing, all that stuff. It's always good to have someone else with you that can, you know, at least hold the camera and edit, especially since I was also in the film on top of everything else. I needed someone there to kind of lighten it up. So I had to, he became that person. And then, so he was much part of that show, part of that kind of scenario. He found out he wasn't really cut out to be the wrestling aspect, so he just kind of became the videographer for the company. And ultimately, he was the one who recorded all of the Jazz Fitness promos early on. By the way, that's also why you can never find a Jazz Fitness promo, by the way, because of that person. So what happened was, So we worked on this film, and we come to find out some very interesting lessons. You can't work with people you know, like friends and stuff, because what happens is when you make a film, you know, obviously want to, you know, especially independent film, you want to work on the cheap, so to speak, but in the same sense, you want the best product possible. And a lot of people think that they can just go to their friends and their buddies to make their films with them, to be in their film. But the reality of it is, because it's your dream to be a filmmaker, your friends see it as a favor to you. So this goes back to the whole, you know, hand washing the other kind of a thing that we talked about earlier. They're your friends, you know, they'll show up in your movie, but you're also delegated not to be upset if they're late or whatever because you're their friend, right? Because even though, you know, it's important to you, they're helping you out as a favor, which is why we went out and, you know, put out a casting call and had actual actors come in. And that's why it moved so smoothly and had so many amazing moments there. The Christian Goodwins of the world and the Zach Townsends of the world and the Devin Henrys of the world and all the other amazing people we met over the years. And I was so proud of every one of them. And, you know, the person I hired originally, I had him on set with me to record and hold the camera to do the editing. He took on more and more roles, and he asked me to write him a letter to get into film school, which I did. He got into film school, and when he was graduating, the film was about to be released, and we had a couple, not released, we had a few more scenes, and then we were supposed to go on the tour. But here's the thing. Bringing it back to the bullying atmosphere, because of the fact this film has a lot of anti-bullying elements to it. And it's about, ultimately, this kid who is tormented and bullied by everyone, who no one understands, this big brother stands up to him and shows him how to be himself and be okay with being himself. And that's ultimately kind of the idea. So we knew a bunch of people, there was an organization we knew about, and there were an anti-bullying group that was led by a young man who actually is one of the coolest people ever, because unfortunately he was a person who was bullied a lot, but instead of, you know, doing the woe is me thing and, you know, being counteractive, he formed a group out of other kids who felt the same way about bullies, that it should never exist, and they formed like a dance group, and his name was Shane. I don't know if he's still involved in doing whatever, but he was an amazing young man, and they did a lot of, you know, dancing and things like that to promote a lot of that anti-bullying stuff. So they, you know, really liked our film. And then some other places and some schools and stuff really liked the message we had. So we had, you know, some stuff. I had things in the works to go to some schools and do, like, you know, school tours with our film. It was going to be a big deal. And also, the other cool thing is, my girlfriend at the time, for a long period of time, I decided it was time for us to get married. So I asked the guy who I worked with as, at one point was my assistant director, or a co-director, co-worker, someone who, you know, knew how to count a camera. I asked him to record my film, my wedding, and he said yes originally. And then, you know, I took a break from social media for a little while, and I told him I was doing so. And that's when he told me that he had a job in California, that he had to leave the project. He couldn't work on the film anymore. And that he also couldn't, you know, obviously do my wedding either. And not to worry about it, because he would tell everyone that he couldn't finish the film, unfortunately. They'll understand. That was on the porch of his house, he told me that. And this person I had, you know, all on set, taught him a lot of the things. I had all the permits. I had all the permission. I got all the locations. And I was on every single set that we did. And then he told me he had a job in a Californian, at a Mexican TV station, in a Hispanic news station in L.A., California, is what he told me. So he didn't know he was leaving, but he had to leave soon, so he wouldn't be able to finish the film. He will tell everyone, though, not to worry about it. And because I was not going to be on social media, I had no way to double check or anything else. And I come to find out after, when I returned to social media, and also that from other people who are in the wrestling world who told me that they saw the person recording an event not far from where he lived, and not that far from when he claimed he was going to be moving. Turns out he continued working on our film, and what he did is he took the film that he recorded, our film, my film, and broke it into multiple pieces and then tried selling it as his own on Amazon. Yes, that's a real thing. And when I came back, at first I was very nice about it. I said, why? I just wanted to know, why. At first I thought, he obviously needs this credit for his school and whatever, and if it helps him, it helps him. But he refused to talk about why he tried to do the film or why he took credit for something he didn't have any kind of rights to. I'm the one that wrote the film. I wrote the screen. I wrote the characters. I got the locations. And when he refused to talk to me about just, it wasn't even about, being upset. I just want to congratulate him. Because one of the people who I'm still friends with when I came back shared that he was at the red carpet showing the movie that I worked on, that I made, that I wrote. So baffling was it was. I messaged him, said congratulations, and then he blocked me. Social media, folks. And he refuses, and he still refused to talk to me. And I reached out several times early on. And he never responded to any of those. And then he would pull all of the Jazz Fitness videos off of YouTube because fans like those things. And because he originally had those things, he pulled them off of there. Because we believe what he was trying to do is hide any association he had with me, to hide the fact that he basically violated the copyright laws and the trademark laws and everything else. Apparently, they didn't teach him that in film school. The same school I went to, by the way, which I do know that is part of the criteria, and one of the things you learn is film law as well. So needless to say, that was my first introduction to that. Sometimes making a film, you bring someone in to help them out, and in the filmmaking world, sometimes it's a dark place because sometimes people take advantage of you. And they will try to steal something that you made your own. And they'll lie to you. But ultimately, what it also did is lost a friend. Because even though it was like a friend, it was a business kind of relationship, it was a friendly relationship. We never had any issues. And it was always good to have a set. That's how I run a set. Relaxing, fun, family-like atmosphere. And that's what I taught him, and that's how he runs his sets now. But regardless, that's just a lesson I had to learn, that not everyone you bring into the world, in your world, are your friends. You have to be wary. And if I had paid attention to the red flags, like the various different differences in our timing, for example, I am extremely punctual, and he was on the nose. And in the film world, you cannot be on the nose. Sorry. Especially when you're setting up auditions, and one of the biggest things where he would set auditions up and he would show up when he said they began, regardless of the fact that he didn't take account that people show up early for those types of things if they're like me and punctual, in which a lot of the times I had to audition people by myself because he wasn't there until on the time that he set up, supposedly. So you got to pay attention when you have red flags like that. When you see that there's such a difference, when you see that someone is trying to do something. Like, for example, right there, if I had noticed that or his influence on what he was going to do when, there, I probably would have spotted that and had him not on my set. I probably wouldn't have asked him to be in my wedding, and I, would have made sure that I myself told everyone why I was taking a break from social media. Ultimately, was to focus on my wedding and my family at the time. And ultimately, that Facebook really was taking much of my time. It wasn't that I wasn't going to fulfill any of my obligations. I was still going to finish the film and do all the thing I had to do associated with that. My son was on set. Regardless of that, you know, I am taken back by, you know, that lesson in that I allowed that to happen. So the moral of the lesson is to always pay attention to those things, because now I spot them and I cut them loose. And that's the other thing. When you have a relationship you look at, regardless if you grew up together, if you went to school together, if you went to the same elementary school, if your parents get along, whatever the case may be, sometimes you have to realize not all friendships are going to last a lifetime. Those are rare. You are probably going to have friends that will last a lifetime. I'm not saying you're not. You will have friends, ones I described, in your lifetime, if you're lucky, hopefully. If they haven't met them yet, I'm sure they're out there. But what I can tell you is that there is going to be a lot of people, like I just described, people who are there when they need something, when they want something, for your popularity. If you're rich, they hang around with you because you're the money person, or you have a nice house, so you're the hangout spot. Or your parents throw the cool parties, so they want to go to your house for your parties. If you're a fitness guy or you're on social media, they hang out around with you for the clout of knowing the guy on social media. See, these are the things I'm talking about that people do. It doesn't make them your friends. They're acquaintances. But how many of those people that you hang around with can you say, hey, you know, can I talk to you about this is really bothering me? Or can you hug your friends? Can you tell your friends you love them? And is it weird to tell your friends you love them? I don't think there is. I don't think it's weird to tell your friends you love them, because ultimately you should. If you care about your friends like you should share that love. In the F4L, we don't have a problem telling each other we love each other, because I do love everybody. And it's not one of those, you know, a lot of people, when they say that in the day, they would laugh at us and say, oh, you're a bunch of this, that, and the other thing. It's not about that. It's about showing the person that you care and not wasting those moments. Because here's the thing. When you talk about moments or conversations you wish you had had, things you wish you said, because here's the reality. You never know what tomorrow brings. We talked about this briefly one time before. A friend of mine recently in wrestling just unfortunately was lost his life in a horrific car accident. I knew him from the wrestling world. Really, really good guy. Him and his brother were wrestling. You know, I knew them from Ring of Honor back in the day. And unfortunately, he was in that car accident. Him and his family, his daughters, bringing his daughters to cheerleading practice. See, in the wrestling world, we're known for having short life expectancy because of the things that we put our bodies through. But reality is, this guy was doing everything he was supposed to be doing. He was doing a good thing. He was bringing his daughters to cheerleading practice, and apparently there was a car accident and someone went hit him head on. The poor guy lost his life. His daughters are in rough shape. So the moral of this lesson isn't to scare you. It isn't to... whatever. First and foremost, my sympathies to the Briscoes and stuff like that, and the family over there. You know, I have a lot of respect for you guys and grew up with you guys as that, so respect to you guys. But anyway, you don't know what tomorrow brings. That's why I have no problem telling people who I care about that I love them, because at least I know that they know that I love them. My kids will never not hear me say that. My son, I will always tell him I love him. He says the same thing. So does my daughter, because words, telling someone that you love them, are the most important things ever. As parents, we need to make sure our kids know that we love them unconditionally. And I think it's because of, you know, because of how I grew up, I always knew that that wasn't how you raise kids. That wasn't how I was going to raise mine. And I grew up, I raised my kids into the F4 lifestyle. through love, care, and compassion, understanding, and respect for each other's differences. Our kids have respect for everyone, no matter who they are. We, you know, support people in the LGBT. Why not? We encourage the kids' creativity. We don't degrade them from wanting to be different. My daughter likes to dye her hair. It's hair, please. My son likes to watch videos of other people playing video games. Well, he's also, you know, taking a doing an internship for NetherRealm Studios now too, and he's doing other big things, and he's doing the charity event with me in June, and he also helped me start the YouTube show that we did years ago. So both kids have their own creativity. Let the kids be themselves. And we support our kids doing whatever. And the best thing is we know our kids can come to us with anything, and they do. And, you know, there is something about, you know, being able to go to whoever, you know, knowing that you can go to someone, your husband, your father or your mother, knowing that they're not going to cut you down or insult you for wanting to have a heart-to-heart. My daughter loves talking to me, and so does my son, because I'm blunt, I'm honest, I listen to everything. As parents, we like to think that our kids are perfect, or our kids never get in trouble. They do. I mean, all kids get in trouble, but it's all about how you deal with that. And I know this is another controversial subject, but I don't believe in hitting our kids, and all honestly, I don't really believe in yelling at our kids. Because it doesn't show anything. It doesn't prove anything. If you're hitting your kids because they're not listening, you're just teaching them that violence is how you solve that. You're teaching them to be afraid of you, not respect or love you. That's the difference. So you got to ask yourself that as a parent. Do you want your kids to respect you, or you want them to be afraid of you? If you're one of those people who want to do that, well, you know, if they are afraid of me, they respect me. And no, they're not the same. There's a difference. If your kids can't come to you to talk to you about whatever stuff is going on in their life, guess what? If you have that kind of relationship with your kids, you don't know who their friends are. You don't know what their favorite color is. Because I know that it's hard for parents sometimes to relate to our kids in the sense where we know everything that's going on. Because we can't know everything, right? I know a lot of you are thinking that. You're wrong. If you're a good parent, you need to be observant of everything. In all honesty, you should know who your kids' best friends are. You should know what kind of foods they like. You should know their hangout spots. And you should know all their other little mannerisms, because these are things that might help you in the future anytime there's a problem. You also need to know that trust is there, that your kids can know that they can come to you to talk to you when they have an issue. If you're someone who lives in by fear, having your kids fear you, they're not going to want to come talk to you about issues that are happening. Or if you're someone that is struggling and your kids know that. Because let me tell you, kids are very perceptive. They know when the parents get weary. They know when parents get anxious. And the last thing a kid wants to do when they're dealing with a bad issue is put more burden on the people that they love or they care about, like their parents. They don't want to insult, they don't want to make their parents feel like they are weak. So, like, sons won't tell their dads that they're getting bullied because of the old wives' tale where, you know, boys will be boys. That's old nonsense. Sticks and stones will break your bones, but names will never hurt you. This is something that I heard a lot growing up from the people who were doing that to me. But guess what? The reality is, and so does all of this, every single psychological test that was done, and the same thing goes for all the studies that show that sticks and stones will break your bones. That's true. But names will destroy you. It's even worse than anything else, especially when it's coming from people that love you or care about you. That's an old wives' tale, and we as parents owe our kids a better future than what we were told growing up. Because let's face it, if it didn't 100% work on us, why do we think it's going to work on them? I don't have our kids grow up the way I grew up. Our kids know that they can come and talk to us, and they do. Let me tell you, some of the conversations I've had with them, Oh, boy. But guess what? I am happy that I have those relationships. I'm happy that my kids know that they can come to talk to me about whatever, that they know that I don't care how what the issue is. And that is something that I think every parent should would really want, the feeling to know everything that's going on in your kid's life and have that kind of relationship where they can come talk to you and respect you in the sense that they know that they can count on you, not be afraid of you or feel like they're imposing on you. You want that welcome relationship. And if you don't have that yet, guess what? The great thing is it's never too late to start now. If you don't know, here's the little homework assignment for you. For those parents out there who don't know your kids' best friends, your homework assignment is to learn about your kids' friends. Because here's the reality also. I often believe and I often say successful people surround themselves with successful people, with other successful people. I am drawn to people who are self-sufficient and people who are fellow dream masters. I am drawn to people who, like myself, put work into everything that they do. And I have no barriers. I go with everyone and I give everyone a chance. And I am open and I listen to everyone and I give everyone the same opportunity to be themselves. Don't lie to me, because that's the last thing you want to do, because practically it's impossible to lie to me. I usually know when someone is lying to me. Actually, I do, which is why our kids don't lie to us, because, well, don't lie to me, because I know better. But it's not because they're, because what happens is, what I find is just talking to our kids is the best way to deal with conflict or discipline. Telling them why they did what they did was wrong is more important than fearing them or scaring them at what they did. Because yelling and hitting them isn't going to show them why they did what was wrong and why I want to protect them. So remember that, folks. Teach by example, not by what we learned, right? Live your own life and raise your kids your way. Don't raise it the way you were raised. Don't base it upon what you see someone else do. Don't base it on the Bradys, because that wasn't a real family. As much as we want to believe that we'd love to have the relationship with our family like the Brady Bunch did, the Brady Bunch people would tell you that that wasn't a real family. And there was a lot of chaos there too. So, everyone, this has been a great opportunity for me to talk about little things. How I got into the filmmaking business and how I dealt with bullying growing up and how I, ultimately why I feel so passionate about helping and making a difference in other people. I think we all can too. So, folks, here's my 90-second mark. Folks, I want to say I'll be here tomorrow to do some film reviews and some fun and maybe a special guest. From now, from the time, the icon, Sean Jazz Stevens, may all your dreams come true.